Mind wandering is one of the basis of ineffective meditation. When the mind keeps wandering, it wants to go back outside. It can't stay inside. The only way you can keep this mind steady, go back inside and keep it centered, is doing that simran, repeating that holy name, hallowing it, hallowing the name of the Lord all the time. Get the mind centered. There is no other way, no other technique works sufficiently enough to keep the mind centered. Now, we can talk of it, hear about it, try a little bit every day in our normal routine of living. But until we get into a session like a retreat where it's hammered in every second, how much you can really get this mind to center itself, you cannot break that pattern. It will stay for you with years of mental drifting. It will always be there until you hammer at it. It's like trying to dig a hole through a rock wall with a nail. But this is exactly what is happening. Your mind is in levels. It offers tremendous resistance to any attempt to harness it or direct it. The five forces of earth, water, fire, air, ether, these forces keep tugging at you because they constitute you. Your whole makeup is a result of these five forces. Outside of the skin, these five forces are in constant conflict with each other. On the outer wall of the skin, inside of you, they are forced to work in unison by the creative life principle. That life principle is the audible life current that passes through you, that you hear. It's an ultrasonic frequency. It's the sound current that is passing through you that holds these five forces like a rein on five horses. And the will, that's your self-being, center with this audible current is the rider. That's your conscience, not your consciousness. You can't use consciousness to harness this power. You have to use your conscience to harness the power. So when you're meditating, you're taking your conscience into control to harness and hold the consciousness that is pulling, that is under the sway of these five forces. You are a result of these five forces. You are the audible life energy. Every form of label is only a mental relationship. It's not the real you. You call yourself man, you call yourself yellow or brown or black, you give yourself all kind of names, and these are labeling that vital energy, which is you. But you can't harness this energy until you can synchronize by pulling that conscience and by hammering at it with that sound. Therefore, when you repeat the name or hallow the name of the Lord, you are pulling it together because it's God itself. Sound waves itself is the key to harnessing audible life energy. It takes sound to harness it. God is not light, God is sound. His light is a result of his conscience focusing out. Let there be light. This is a result of his own conscience projecting it out. He is the audible sound. And you have to hear it, you have to feel it, you have to become identified with it. The holy names don't have any power by themselves. You can use any word, as Krishnamurti says, Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, Mercedes-Benz, Mercedes-Benz. or any kind of a word you can repeat, but they themselves don't have power. They gain their power from the very first individual who incorporates his being into that word, who makes that whole force field his life principle. That when it breaks open and he becomes fully realized by repeating that sound, that word, then he in turn can impart that energy into another being. And the next being now repeats those same words on the power, on the force field, on that jet stream of the very first individual who has broken the track, who has broken that current down to an actual principle. Then the next person can pass it on. So when it comes down to us, at the level where we are, you have a whole length of people way ahead of you who have taken their life and synchronized it by the repetition of those words to the point that their life is surrendered into the stream of energy and are acting as one. So when you are meditating now, you are pulling this whole stream in. It's like a tunnel, and you're drawn into it and it starts pulling. So you have all that ahead of you working for you. The words themselves have no power. The life that gave itself, that human being whose life was given to initiate the very first movement and surrender it with, and broke the current and became one with the current, can then impart it to the next being, and by virtue of that, these words now gain power. Yogananda calls that spiritualizing it. The ancient saints all call it hallowing it. That's hallowing the name of the Lord. Taking that sound and incorporating it into your being so that the audible current now becomes you. There is no other technique. None of the saints gave any other technique but hallowing the name of the Lord. They all point down to this as the most effective way of breaking this ego, breaking this fivefold nature of earth, water, fire, air, ether into an effective alliance with the life current. There is no other method. So when we start off to meditate, some schools will give you japa, which means repetition of a mantra. Simran means the same thing, repetition. Hallowing the name of the Lord means the same thing. Prayer unceasingly means the same thing. In the final summation, it means get down and do it. You gotta do it. You gotta break this ego pattern by the use of these words in your consciousness over and over till it becomes a working movement in the bloodstream. That life is in your bloodstream. And when your conscience can take these words and synchronize night and day to the point that it seems to go on automatically without effort, inwardly without even moving a tongue, then you are going to get the result of breaking those patterns and seeing the radiant form of the Lord. The radiant form of the Lord is there, but he is not going to show himself until you prove to yourself or prove to him by virtue of your effort that you are ready to surrender every form of attachment from the outside world for this particular alignment. It's a very tough road, but it's the only natural road there is. There is no way to get inside, not even by drugs. You can't get into that audible current. So when the saints say you have to hallow the name of the Lord, they are talking to us of the only natural method that is built into the system by the creative impulse. We are that primal current, each one of us, but we don't know that. And until we do the holy name, until we hallow it, we cannot gain self-realization. And when we synchronize with that, then it's possible to gain God-realization. You first have to gain self-realization before you can gain God-realization. And self-realization comes from the constant hammering at these names in your consciousness with that current. To break through and become aligned with it. Then, from that springboard, you move into God-realization. The radiant form, the God-self, becomes visible within. So anyone tells you you're going to get God-realization in one lifetime, they're not asking for an easy thing. They're telling you something very difficult. But the saint says it can be done. They have done it. Therefore, we can do it. Birth is a gift. It is something that has been given to us to have a human form. It ties the soul to the human body by the mind, at the eye level. And you have to start there to become synchronized. As long as you live, you have to eat. Therefore, nutrition is the basis of spirituality. From the physical level, the mental level, the emotional level, into the spiritual level, it will pursue all the way. The degree of a spiritual person's growth is determined upon the amount of food, the type of food he consumes. What level he can ascend to is also determined by that food. In the food, we have the five elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether. Those who live on the earthy element, you'll notice their food that they eat always keep them earthbound in the lower regions of their body. Those who eat of the watery nature also stay in the procreative nature of their body. Those who eat of the fiery foods stay in the intestinal areas of their body. Those who eat of the airy foods will stay in the chest of the body. And those who eat of the etheric foods will stay in the brain of the body. Every type of food is set up for spiritual growth. And nature designed us as a spiritual being. Therefore, the highest food that man can, in a physical sense, consume is fruit. It starts high in the trees, it grows on the vine, and it goes to the ground. But nevertheless, it carries an alkaline base with it all the time. Alkalinity in the body is important to keep the balance. We have 80% alkalinity in the body and 20% acid, and when the balance is toppled or out of control and there's too much acidity, we have disease. It's very difficult to be over alkaline. It's very easy to become over acid. If you go in the early stages of alkaline nutrition and the body is toxic, it will flush the body too fast. And you may appear to have little blotches in your skin. And you may become afraid. But don't let that bother you. This is nature's own way of throwing the toxins out of you so that you can get back in balance. In the meantime, you become irritable. You get fidgety. The slightest reaction would cause you to be aggravated. Simply because the toxins are pulling themselves out on the outer surface. You have to be consistent and go in and flush and get that body to clean itself up. And the more you clean it out and you get back to the raw food, the more the body will become alkaline. But this is not an overnight thing. This is a way of life. The spiritual life is not something we just jump in and change over. Saints don't become saints by an overnight method. It's a process in their whole life. They make a whole life process of gradual elimination of certain types of food through the intake and they're gradually cleaning up their bodies, and they're centering their mind on that hallowing of the name of the Lord. Now, we can't hallow the name in a mechanical way and expect results. We have to do it with love. All the saints tell us we must love. Love is the basis of action, outward or inward. Otherwise, if there is no love, it's all ego. It's mechanical. And if it's ego and mechanical, there is no growth. It gets back to exactly where you are when you began. You're not progressing. You're simply expanding energy without result. Repeating the holy name is a very, very important process, because you are using the etheric energy in the brain from one of the five rivers that flow out from divine life. Your scriptures say there are five rivers flowing from paradise, meaning beyond the desired level. These five rivers are ether, air, fire, water, earth. And the main one is ether, the first river of life flowing down. That is drawing beyond the desire level. And when you repeat the name, you are going beyond desire. That is the only way you can go beyond desire. There is no other way that the mind of man, working through the brain, which will be capable of going beyond desire, unless he takes some word which he uses as language to communicate with others or with himself. And by virtue of these sounds that he used, he will tend to set a pattern of inward communication to break the desire pattern in himself. That's why the holy name that is repeated and hallowed inside can break these desire patterns. It can break the drifting of the mind. It holds the mind in harness for the first time and prevents it from drifting. It's a simple technique, but it's the most difficult technique the saints have ever given us. Anything of value worth having requires a great deal of devotion and effort. And don't be fooled by its simplicity, because the mind itself will start drifting away and telling itself, I'm not getting results after 15, 20, or 30 minutes. 40 minutes, and may pat yourself on the shoulder pretty good and says, boy, I've done 40 minutes, my mind ain't drifting, you haven't done much. The real test is to go through the process more and more to see how this mind is playing games, how this mind is dragging you into undercurrents of your nature. And until you get down into your own basic nature, pull it back to realize the importance of hallowing the name, you're not cracking through that ego nature. The ego is still going to raise your head. The ego is like a divine octopus. Every time you cut off one tentacle, 10 grow back in its place. It's an amazing creature, this ego. There is no way to break it. It has, you ever seen an octopus? It has one big eye in the center. But it sees through that one eye, nothing else, they don't know anything else but eye, and everything. But to really get at him and get past those tentacles and really perforate him is to bear down on that eye. And to bear down on the eye inside of you, it takes the word. Eye is a word too. I is a behavior pattern of a word, and it takes another word to knock out a word of its importance within the structure of the life current. So you have to have some other word that means something more important than I to knock out the self-importance of that I, so that the two will now become synchronized and act as one. So when you hallow the name of the Lord, which is more important than the word I, it will start to diminish the control of the I-ness of the limited self and allow you now to have control. Therefore, when you meditate, you must keep hammering away at that particular pull of the desire. You must get down to that consciousness. Meditation is not to inflate the consciousness. Meditation is to center on your conscience, your real being. There's a vast difference between your consciousness and your conscience. The consciousness plays games, but your conscience knows and reacts and responds. And until these two are lined up, you have a constant conflict going on inside. Nutrition is very important. There are three actions in nutrition. One, it tends to discharge the body. Two, it tends to generate or charge up the body. And three, it recharges the body. They are known in the Oriental language as tamasic, rajasic, and sattvic. A sattvic food is a regenerative food, that it's raw and pure in its natural state, and the highest quality possible is the fruit, bordering on light and water. The tamasic are the old, stale, cooked foods that tend to decompose, and all the vitality is already gone out of it. It's been there too long. It produces a state of inertia, a state of laziness, a state of tiredness in the body. A lack of energy is very devitalizing. Stale foods. 90% of the foods that we have in the supermarket are cooked and stored and canned, therefore you can call them all tamasic foods. Rajasic foods are charging foods. That's why you call the food that is cooked and canned out discharging. They discharge the cells, they discharge the body. The one that is charging is just taken from the vine and cooked. That's rajasic. It's spiced up. It will charge the body, but it will not regenerate the body 100%, because it does constitute or contribute to disease. Cooked foods, stale foods, are all contributing foods towards disease. The dead cells, the dying cells, the sick cells feed upon dead food. They feed upon cooked food. Living cells feed on living food, and living food is raw food. Now, when the cells are sick or clogged up, they have to be flushed out. Therefore, cooked food is not an asset. Dead food is not an asset. Only raw food as possible as you can get it, and close to the liquid form, flushing the body to clean it up. Therefore, you're pulling now an energy from a higher level into the body. But don't go and try a raw food diet and say you're going to become spiritual overnight. It doesn't work that way. That is the road towards spirituality. That is the road to health. But the road is paved with good intentions, you have to slowly work at it. You got to make changes inside. You have to realize and understand what you're doing to bring these changes inside. And as you bring these changes about, the help becomes obvious to you. Along with nutrition, you must have mechanical movement, corrective postures. Certain postures are contributive to disease, and there are certain postures are only used to meditate. Wrong posture in meditation sends the consciousness back down into the subconscious realm. The right posture will keep the consciousness up at the eye level. So again, it's not just mere nutrition, but posture, and the correct posture tends to open the consciousness. It also prevents the gases from accumulating in various pockets in the body that tends to produce the laziness, that tends to produce the tiredness. The gas itself that's in you, coming from the air currents and from the fire currents, working upon the water current and the earth current in you, blocks up the etheric level of the brain, and therefore the aura becomes clogged up and it can't move. Then you say, well, I'm eating good food and I'm feeling more tired every day. Why? And I'm not getting good results in meditation. What's wrong? Posture has a lot to do. The person may have a tendency to want to sleep in meditation, may want to lie down in meditation because he feels that's more conducive. That posture is incorrect. It tends to bring on the lower levels of the consciousness. It pulls down the consciousness from the eye level. And the very first indication is boredom, lack of interest, a disassociation from the environment. These are all symptoms of the incorrect posture in meditation. They start to increase after a while. The body starts to feel tired. They don't seem to have the pep to do the daily routine, simply because the gases are accumulating now in areas where they did not accumulate before. And you say to yourself, well, before I got into meditation, I can do this and I can do that. And now here I'm in meditation, I'm supposed to get progress, I'm eating right and I'm not making progress. What's happening to me? Posture brought on a different release of the gases into different areas, and they start accumulating, and therefore you're not making a change. The third condition in the meditative life, along with eating and posture, is the stiffness and the soreness that comes from long hours of meditation. Here you need massage. Here you need pressure on those areas that tend to clog itself up as the poisons accumulate in their movement, as the gases accumulate in the different pockets, and they have to move on because they're not accustomed to be in that one posture all the time. It's not normal for it at the moment to be constructed. It's not normal for a person to sit down constantly and meditate in this environment because he is not growing up with that. He's grown up to be active, running around. So to sit down in one position and then find cramps, this is coming on now by the accumulation of the gases in certain areas. Now through massage or pressure along various points in the body, we start shifting the gas, we start moving it. And by moving it now, it starts flushing. The human being now is starting to regenerate the body. Vitality is returning and disease is diminishing itself. Disease is the result of breaking the natural law of karma which designed this body. And until we get back to the natural behavior and the natural application of the law, we will have the disease with us. Now, we can meditate and we can feel pretty high. We can be pretty relaxed. But as soon as we drop down from that level, we got the aches and pains of the disease. And then you say, how is that? and been doing so good, and all of a sudden I dropped down from that level and I got these aches and pains. The body seems to retain fluids. The body seems to be getting sluggish. That is because the sudden drastic change from one pattern of living to another pattern of living has come on too soon. You're making too fast a change. And the process has to be gradual. You have to be capable of recognizing the gradual change. You got to be able to work with the gradual change. And it's not an overnight result. And you can't think of the end result, how long I will get there and what I'll do when I get there. That has nothing to do with the spiritual life. The spiritual life is cleanliness of purification of the physical frame that has been clogged up by wrong thought patterns, wrong nutritional patterns, wrong postural patterns, and wrong contact patterns. These movements all tend to block the energy. Blocked by these various patterns, and we have to correct them by going back inside and pulling the five senses in and looking in and settling down. Sight, smell, taste, hear, touch. These five avenues have to be centered back, and we center it at the eye level. That's the connecting point where the soul, as the audible life principle, connects with the physical body by the mind. And the breath comes in through the nostril and ties it. It ties the soul to the frame by the breath and works with the mind. The mind is a slave to the soul. But we, from a long series of wrong thought patterns, have made the soul a slave to the mind. Now it's up to us to reverse this pattern of making the mind a servant to the soul. We don't have a soul, we are soul. And until we can synchronize our consciousness with this audible current, this life principle that is coming in, we can't break that pattern of making the soul a slave to the mind. And repetition or hallowing of the holy name is the most natural way of breaking that chain. So let's go back again, and before we go into hallowing the name again, let's ask if there's any questions you want to ask. Eating, posture, physical contacts, with the body, the exercise and thought patterns. Your thought patterns are things that interfere. They are the contacts that interfere. What would you do? How you relate to your physical body to other people. We communicate with our bodies, and if you are angry, you have a certain physical gesture that you will make. and the body will set in these patterns of gestures, and therefore that would be an incorrect pattern for the body. If you're happy, the body will go through a particular gesture, and that pattern would be beneficial to the body. So by virtue of your own mental state, you begin to set up wrong body contacts, wrong body associations. Therefore, that body association will begin to trigger off after a while when you get aggravated. You'll see it in children. If they're angry, you see they begin to make a certain physical movement. And you don't have to wait too long to observe that movement. You see starting to follow a pattern. And before you know it, they begin to express it. So you can always say, I know what's coming when I see my child do this. Anytime you say something and they start doing like that, a wrong body pattern is begun, and from that on a chain of movements in the body will continue. We do it when we're adults, but we don't notice it. And it takes another adult to observe it, to see these wrong body patterns. It's communicating, it's called body language. Every thought triggers into the body a gesture, and that's a body pattern. That's a contact pattern with your body. They're two different things. Consciousness is your awareness through your five senses to relate to the environment which you live in. Conscience is the beingness of your nature in which you have to live all the time with. Now, you can have mental tug of war in making decisions with your mind, but if you're going to make a final decision to act it, it's your conscience that will make that decision and not your consciousness. If you have to make a choice by your consciousness, you will start to debate with yourself, should I or should I not? That dualistic condition exists in your consciousness. And by virtue of past experience, your conscience will make the final decision for you to act. And whenever you act it out, whatever happens from that action, that is what you got to live with. That's the sum total of you. Not your consciousness, but your conscience. Because you will have to carry the memory of it. And there is where you made the decision from. It's made from the decision of a memory pattern. See? Your conscience is your memory patterns locked up already. And because you never hear the word guilty consciousness, guilty conscience, you're suffering with a guilty what? Conscience, not a consciousness. You see, the consciousness can never be guilty. Consciousness is a dualistic movement in us, allowing us to make a choice. Well, whenever we make the choice, in the final action of allowing the body to experience, this is determined by conscience. Your conscience made you do it now. This goes against my conscience. It doesn't go against my consciousness. Because you have to act it. And when you act it, you are releasing the energy which comes from the conscience. Because the conscience is the harness, is the operator of the audible life energy in you, not the consciousness. The consciousness is merely the carriage. But the actual leverage, the actual power that is pulling, the actual controlling principle in you, that is really you, is conscience. So when we say we are trying to contact God or realize God in ourselves, we are actually trying to live with our conscience. We're not living with our consciousness. Consciousness is the field, it's the ground in which all things take place. But when the action occurs, it's in your conscience that you have to live with. So conscience is beingness. And consciousness is awareness. vast difference between the two. Now, consciousness is a stepping stone to beingness. You need consciousness to recognize your beingness. But any decision to act and release life into motion through this mechanism, that is determined by conscience. During meditation, you're supposed to hallow the name. Are you hallowing the name during meditation? That's what we're supposed to be doing. That's what is called Simran, or hallowing the name. When you sit down to meditate, you're supposed to repeat the holy name over and over and over. That's what we're doing now. Nothing else short of that should be in the mind. Otherwise, the mind is playing games and the ego is taking over. When I meditate, I repeat the holy name. So, by virtue of repetition of the holy name, and you repeating it, this is what Jesus says: when two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. The radiant form is possible to be seen. You can't see the radiant form until you start hallowing the name. The name is this audible principle. You got to have this thing going in your mind. So if I sit down, I myself got to repeat it, and this makes possible for me to see the radiant form. If three or four are gathered, or half a dozen or a dozen, we have to generate this name. We have to generate this frequency in order to see the radiant form. So it's not me alone. It's the God Self that is doing all the work. I of myself can do nothing. There is no possibility that this physical frame can do anything. And don't let us kid ourselves that it's doing anything. It's not doing a single thing. All life is predetermined. All life is a gift. Our so-called free choice is very minute, so limited a choice versus what these five forces are doing in the universe of water, fire, earth, air, and ether. These five forces are held together by the audible current, which dominates the whole life. It dominates the whole universe. When we put ourselves in the way by our personality, we block the experience. And we gotta get that out. We gotta get this particular personality out of the way. So to get it out of the way, we gotta repeat. We got to practice Simran. We got to hallow the name of the Lord. This brings us into humility. The purpose we are existing is only one. There's only one reason why we exist. We don't have three, four reasons for existing. The one reason we are existing is to learn humility. There is no other reason for us to exist here in this creation. The soul was designed to learn humility. Everything else was placed here by the Creator to test that humility. And we are caught up in it. And we are helped along when we don't put ourselves in the way. So, the simplicity of the method imposed upon us by the saints is to help us to practice humility. That's why they gave us a simple technique: hallow the name of the Lord. It will produce humility in you. Weren't you initiated? Weren't you initiated? It has nothing to do with the meaning. It has to do with the action of doing the thing. Coca-Cola, 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 Mercedes-Benz, Mercedes-Benz, go home, go home, come home, come home. Anything you say would not make any difference. It is the repetition that makes the thing work. The one name is what the thing is all about. It's the repetition. Let me find out something. Here is a bucket of cream. And you want to make butter out of cream. I give you a choice of 5 ladles or spoons or paddles. One paddle made out of gold. One, pick any one. Now let's say you pick the golden one, the one made of gold. You got to churn that cream, otherwise it's not going to turn to butter. But you know what churning represents? It represents work, turning over and over and over. The gold spoon and the wooden spoon makes no difference when it comes down to the actual working with your hand. If another person take a wooden spoon and you took the gold one, and I say to you now, by virtue of turning that cream, you will get butter. Do you think that the wooden spoon will make less butter than the gold spoon? They can't make less butter because it will require 330,000 revolutions to make the butter. That means both of you got to turn that cream 330,000 times with a gold spoon or a wooden spoon. And I don't care what kind of spoon you use. You still got to turn that cream 330,000 times. Now, if you hook it onto a mechanical motor to speed up the rotation and minimize the physical action, the motor don't go any faster. It's still got to make 330,000 revolutions to get butter. You get the picture?
How would you relate devotion to that?
Devotion is the constancy of doing it. Don't get carried away that devotion is some holier than thou thing. It's not. The devotion is the constancy of doing it. That's the constancy to do it and not haphazardly forget about it. That's not devotion. That's not devotion. Devotion is the easy movement, gentle, effortless motion without fatigue, without animosity, without resentment. This is devotion. The constant doing. Sit down and repeat the holy name in that slow constancy. And don't worry about your importance, don't worry about the time, just do it. And you will find that in a moment of that whole cream will turn butter, that whole mind wandering will suddenly stabilize. This is what they call japa, this is what they call simran, this is what they call hallowing the name, this is called repetition. The saints have done it. You see them in their little rosary. The gentle, gradual action of doing it. That is what devotion is. Devoting their time, centering their mind to their natural, gradual process of repetition. And has nothing to do with mechanical. Mechanical with a you catch up. That's mechanical. The gradual, normal movement, slow, effortless, the love that you're doing it with, knowing that you are talking to the Lord inside of you, who is the giver of life, who is the personification of your being. This gradual entreatment is the devotion. This is what devotion is. You are entreating that principle to flow into you.
If you have a confrontation with anyone,
Yes, it does. Above all things, no matter what it is, it does not take precedent over hallowing the name. The hallowing of the name is your life belt in the ocean of consciousness amidst the sharks. That's your friends. They got big teeth.
Love is devotion,
because love is constancy. It's neutral. Love is not positive, neither is it negative. It's neutral. Out of my love came forth a universe. It projects the universe. Out of my love, I pull back the universe into myself. Love is like the web coming out of us, the belly of a spider. You don't see the web in the spider when you look at it. But it's funny, when that spider determines he wants to have a house, what he does? He starts spinning a web from the navel. So love is like that. It is a normal flow that has no opposition, no resentments. There's a big difference between love and affection and like. Affection and like are predetermined by conditions. There are no conditions in love. Love is an unconditional experience. But the moment you like somebody, you like them for a specific condition. The moment you have an affection with somebody, it's for a specific condition. To love them, there are no conditions. To say you love the world, there are no conditions in that. You may like your next door neighbor, you may not like him. Whatever affection you have, these are conditionals. Love by itself is pure, unconditional. It's very, very withdrawn and detached. But it's not cold, neither is it oppressive. It's the equanimity of your nature. That's why they say God is love. We are saying that God, in his entirety, is completely neutral. God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, meaning this neutral force in its totality descends down into an affected state and manifests and work through that state. Now we, in turn, to get back to that neutral state, must make contact with the projection being a Christ-realized individual, which is called the only begotten Son, the Christ-light in creation, not the man Jesus. Any realized individual who gets to that level of realization, he acts as a manifestation for that love. That love, which is pure, eternal, unattached, the only way it can manifest, it comes down in creation as the intelligence within creation. That's what they call the Christ love, or the only begotten Son, the only manifested expression of it, based upon a condition. That's where it's conditional. That's why it says, none come unto the Father but by me. That's the condition. Within that level, that love is conditional now. It places a condition upon you. If you be for me, you can't be for the next person. That's why he puts it another way. You can't be for me or be for mammon. That's a condition. You can't want the God self and still at the same time crave for the physical self. That's a condition. So this love, when it comes into creation, that puts a condition upon us who live in creation. When we line up with it, there is no more conditions, then that love is equal. So when we use the word love, we are talking of something that is divine and equal. When we talk of affection and like, we're talking of conditional relationships with others. Now, it doesn't say to like your neighbor as yourself. He doesn't say to have an affection for your neighbor as yourself. It's not possible. Like and affection are conditional. To love your neighbor as yourself, you have to know yourself first. And to know yourself is to be realized in God first. Then it's possible to love your neighbor, because that has no conditions. It's no possibility for you to love another man or a woman on a conditional basis if you are going to love yourself first. And if you're loving yourself, you have to be God realized to some extent. To see this working, then you can do it for another person. So the realized man is the one who knows himself, therefore he loves the self, the great self inside, and is able to love you outside at an equal level, without any conditions. Most of us appear to be loving others on the outside, but in reality are liking and expressing affection based upon conditions. I like his face or I don't like his face. I like the way he talks or I don't like the way he talks. I like the paycheck he brings home too. These are all conditional expressions of ourselves. Because in that condition, we have possessiveness. True love, there is no condition, there is no possessiveness. There is no jealousy. Because it's an equal state. You have to have it inside to radiate it. And everyone has to be, from that standpoint, an equal expression of yourself. It's like an umbrella. You are the pole in the middle of the umbrella, and all the ribs go out from you. There are no conditions in those ribs, because each one has to have the same tension, like the spokes in a wheel. They all move out from the hub to the rim. So real love is unconditional. You get it? So it's not so much the name and the meaning of the name, because you can repeat anything for that matter. It is your devotion and the time spent in effortlessly synchronizing with the consciousness. And the name did not get this power until some person initially triggered it to give it power. That this power comes down by virtue of others repeating it and experiencing the power locked up in it, that it will pass on to you for you to experience it. Now you can initiate a new name, you can use a new name, don't have to use the old one. But you got to live that whole life experience to give that new name power for somebody to follow it, to work it. Your own life has to be an example of that thing. For instance, if you sing, "Thou art my life," the first time it was written, it had no power. But the man who sang it, or the man who composed it, spent his entire life singing only that. Not a single thought was ever in his mind. From the morning he woke up to the day he died, he sang that song, "Thou art my life, thou art my love, thou art the sweetness which I do seek. In the thought by my love, I taste thy name so sweet, so sweet. Devotee knows how sweet you are, whom you let know." He sang this all through his life. Not a single thing else, night and day, like the Hare Krishna group. They sing their Hare Krishna mantra the whole day and the whole night. But they are changing. It's not the Hare Krishna mantra. It has nothing to do with the Hare Krishna mantra. It is because the song is being carried over and over in the consciousness to pull the consciousness in. Those individuals who are repeating anything are getting results from the repetition of pulling their consciousness together. So, by virtue of this is what we're talking. If you can state it in mind and let it move, it will grow. So it has nothing to do with the words themselves. It has to do with you and how much of your life you're going to give into it. And your realization will break. It'll pour out of you from the constant repetition. Then some other person seeing this can take that same mantra or that same word and try now. And what are they trying to do? They're trying to relive the experience that you've gained from the repetition. Then they will get results. Well, how the results are going to come? Because you are an example. You have set the force field. It will transfer itself now. It will start passing on. It's a chain reaction. Yeah? And that's what it is. It's a chain reaction being transferred on. Okay. Let's get some more meditation. Exercising this. Until you correct the body, you can't do the other one properly and understand what they have to do with your body. By the time you're born, and before you're born, 9 months in the womb, you were doing a posture. You had to be doing posture. That posture is the most corrective posture there is. And this is it. Not so easy. That's right.
Said not to force yourself if you can't do it. I've tried it for 10 years. I can't do it.
Oh.
sweet the sound of this master voice of you. In all prevailing silence, he whispers,
wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea,
Wave of the sea, he's all in the sea. I'm the bubble, make me the sea. I'm the bubble, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. So do thou, my Lord. So do thou, my Lord. Thou and I never apart. Thou and I never apart. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. So do thou, my Lord. So do thou, my Lord. Thou and I never apart. Thou and I never apart. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. So do thou, my Lord. So do thou, my Lord. Thou and I never apart. Thou and I never apart. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. So do thou, my Lord. So do thou, my Lord. Thou and I never apart. Thou and I never apart. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea.
Divine at the eye center and heart of the holy name. Oh, it seems a long time to most of us, and the inconstancy of the mind again is the fault. We can't keep the mind steady because it's wandering too much. The only way you can hold the mind to do hours of meditation in which the soul can be experienced, you have to hallow the name. There is no other technique superior than hallowing the name. there you have the name sufficiently that your live stream becomes identified with it. You do not make progress in meditation. The mind just wanders around, floating around, searching for excuses. It has to come back to that point. It has to experience this identity before you can really make progress. The purpose of connecting the soul with God through the radiant form of the Master is what meditation is involved. Anything short of that is not meditation. We are aiming at connecting the soul through the radiant form with God. That is the statement meant by Jesus, "None come unto the Father but by me." There is no soul nature in the human form capable of identifying itself with the true universal experience of God's self until it contacts the radiant form, the Christ self within. And the Christ self is not a person, it is the only manifested principle in all creation. That's why it's referred to as the only begotten Son. This is an experience you have to achieve by the meditation. And Simran is the only way to do it. Otherwise you call it japa or hallowing the name. No other technique has proven effectively to do it. All through the centuries the saints have said the same thing. No one can come to that state except they pass through that experience. That's why they emphasize prayer unceasingly. They emphasize the idea. We know it as hallowing the name. Also it's known as japa, or it's also known as simran. It's that consistency of the consciousness in order to break that shell of the ego. The ego is so strong that it feels that it can get into that state. It can't get into that state until it surrenders. The etheric energy passing through the mechanism interferes. Since we are a composition of matter, which is the earth principle, water, which is the fluidic principle, fire, which is the thermal principle, air, which is the gaseous principle, and ether, the etheric energy, until we break these forces and put them in harness by the consciousness, we can't arrive at that state. It's not possible. Guru Nanak said it. No one can come to that state if he is a slave to one of the five elements. If he has any compensation to pay, any karma to pay to one of these five, he cannot enter that state. We can only go to that state in deep meditation by harnessing one of the five, or harnessing all five. Repetition of the holy name may seem mechanical. The evidence is that how long can one sit down and do it? How long can one really stay in that state without coming back to the five senses, without coming back to the physical realm, without the mind drifting back to the similar physical bodily sensations? The physical bodily sensations tend to pull us back. Is our desire nature. Our ego is so strong, it thinks it knows all the answers to the spirit. But if it did have the answer, we would all be God realized, but it doesn't. That's why we are not there. Therefore we search, we keep searching for new ideas, we keep searching for different schools of thinking. And in the long run, when we do come back, every teacher tells you, repeat some word. They're going to give you a new mantra as a shortcut to God. The word has nothing to do with getting you to God. It's the repetition, the consistency, the devotion of using it that gets you there. Krishnamurti once said, anybody can repeat Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola and get there too. Or Mercedes-Benz and get there. Maharishi tells you the same thing. Repeat a word and you get there. All of them are telling the same thing. But if you don't repeat it, it can't work. And that is what the principle is all about. It's based on the consistency of repeating till you become identified with it. Until your consciousness, which uses words, becomes identified with the audible life current that is a principle of sound, it can't experience that condition that they call realization. Measurements by mechanical devices show there's something going on in the mind of the mystic, going on in the mind of the saint, that is not normal in average human minds. That something is beyond. What is it that they're doing that they can get into that state that allows them to stay in that level? They're only doing one simple fact, hallowing a name, hallowing a sound, becoming one with it. It's true that they achieve realization. It's true that they get equanimity and oneness of the mind. We can't get in that state until we break this wandering state of the mind from the five senses. The purpose of meditation is to bring that mind there with love. We go in that state in the early stages of our meditation by prayer. And then after we find a few little experiences that tell us prayer is working. All we have done is just raise the brain to a point where the alpha rhythm can work a little and get some result by some reaction in the environment. And we get so inflated that we think we are controlling our environment immediately. None of us can control the environment because none of us don't know what God we are worshipping. We don't even know the devil that we call a devil, let alone try to condemn him or criticize him, that if he exists or he don't exist. So don't you see how ridiculous the mind is? We say there's a thing called a devil and don't even know what it is. And then we say there's a God and don't even know what it is. The mind is constantly playing games with itself over and over, searching for identity. When the mind ceases to search and settles down and becomes one with the consistent devotion that is going on in it, then that mind experiences self-realization. But it does not experience God-realization. It can only experience self-realization when it settles down. That's the very first experience it will get, is self-realization. There's a vast difference between self-realization and God-realization. Self-realization brings you to the point of aligning your brain and your mind with that energy in the form of a sound. And when you hear it going on inside, you begin to lose your ego. You begin to lose your self-personality. You begin to feel a sense of oneness. That's only self-realization, that's not God-realization. This sense of oneness of loss of personality is not God-realization. God-realization is beyond that. We have to start to travel up the levels of consciousness in self-realization to God-realization. We have to start moving from Tisratil, the point between the eyebrow, and move on to Satchkan, which is the fifth level. And no one can go into the fifth level by himself. It's not possible. If it could be done, everybody would get in there. All the saints have told us the same thing over and over, that we can't get in there by ourselves. The soul, by its own nature, has the brilliance of 12 suns. And if it lives a life of detachment, it does not touch itself to no desire. On its own effort, it can only achieve the brilliance of 13 suns. And the darkness of the fourth level is so strong, it can't even outshine that. It can't go beyond that into the universal sound field. The universal sound field has no light. It's all sound, all ultrasonic waves. And yet the soul can only shine with the brilliance of 13 suns and stay there. Then the Lord of creation keeps it there and allows it to fluctuate back and forth. Now it takes a realized soul with the brilliance of 24 suns that comes down from the highest level down into the fourth level and open the way for the soul to perceive this brilliance and connect it and walk through that field of pure sun current and go past that state to take it back up. So when they say none can come unto the Father but me, they are talking of physiological facts, not psychological facts, physical things that are there in the universe. And you can only get there by doing the very same physical things that are put us there. That's why Simran or Japa, hallowing the name, may seem as a simple, ridiculous practice, but it's the only key that can get us past that level. It is the only thing that can put us in that state. And the only way we can trust these saints is to do it. We don't know the truth until we do it. It may seem kind of odd that you got to do this thing over and over to get results. Years ago when I heard of it, I myself didn't believe it too. That you can break through that particular field by the principle of repetition. But it's until they point out this simple story of turning cream into butter. Cream is a liquid, butter is a solid. To change from one to the other, you gotta beat it. And beating is a slow, methodical, ridiculous behavior. If I use a wooden paddle, or a gold paddle, or a metal paddle, the paddle itself would be the mantra. It mean nothing. The paddle itself don't change the cream into butter. It's the consistency of churning, it's the repetition of the motion that changes the cream into the butter. Even if you attach an electrical motor to the paddle and beat it faster, it ain't gonna make butter any more better. It's simply that it's gonna go faster and the result is still gonna be butter. But the amount of revolutions that you got to make is going to be the same. The amount of revolutions that that paddle has to make are going to be the same. Either by the hand or the mechanical method, either by a gold blade or a wooden blade or a plastic blade, the result is still the same. A certain amount of revolutions make it possible for it to change from cream into butter. And equally true in the human brain, for it to experience that radiant form inside, has to have this constant impingement going on over and over with a single word or double words or more words hammering away inside to make it vibrate at that frequency, to bring it to that point of crystallization. Once you experience that breakthrough, you have entered what is called self-realization. From then on, you begin to work your way to God realization.